Well, hello out there in Radio Land. Once again, Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH1071.com, where we talk about fun stuff. We learn a lot, we laugh even more, and always come away with a few more brain cells, or at least more powerful brain cells than we had before we decided to tune into these outstanding examples of broadcasting journalism. So today, as we do about once a month, sometimes more often, if the opportunity presents itself, I present to you the official naturalist of Marion and environs of this radio station and other entities, Mr. James Anderson, coming to you live here from our studio in the great Buckeye State. So let's check in, make sure that my intern has properly duct taped all the cords, properly connected one receptacle into another transmitting piece of gadgetry. And hello, James, how are you on this fine mid-fall day?
Oh, I am wonderful. How are you?
Oh, fairly fantastic for the most part, as we like to say. And we do get together here on the station, although you do broadcast through other broadcasting entities, about once a month to talk about the flora and fauna, the natural side of the great countryside, cities and suburbs and rural areas that we call home, that we visit, we work in, we recreate in. And you're oftentimes quite a wealth of knowledge. Sometimes we learn a bit talking to each other. And again, most importantly, we often giggle a few times. So, James, for the people that may have not heard you on this station previously, I'm not sure anybody possibly could ever miss these programs, but in case somebody has, remind us again your job title, what it is you do, and just a little smidgen about your background.
Yeah, so I am the park naturalist for the Marion County Park District. So I'm going on 8 years working for the park district, and my services that I provide for the community is I offer free nature programs for all ages. And either I can come out to your facility and do a program if you're in a youth or adult organization, such as like 4-H, Boy Scouts, Lions Clubs, just to give some example. Or you guys can come out to our parks, the county parks that we are in charge of, which includes Paradise, Greenspur, Myers Woods, and of course the Marion Tallgrass Trail. So those are the parks that we're in charge of. And a lot of people don't realize there are about 8 or 9 parks departments in Marion County, including us in the city and each village and some of the other green spaces around the county as well. But just a slight little background about myself is I have two wildlife degrees. I have one from wildlife management from Hocking College and a bachelor's degree in wildlife fishery conservation management from the University of Rio Grande. And I've been in the whole naturalist field for about 13 years. So, yeah, it's been fun working in different camp and non-camp settings across Ohio and the state of Kentucky. And I've really enjoyed being in the 8 years I've been with the Marion County Park District. So that's kind of a little background about my services and about me.
So last time, James, we talked about the other park districts in Marion County and around Marion County. And I was quite surprised by how many there are. But you are the only paid employee in Marion County who is associated with a park district. That's the main difference, right? That you are devoting full time. This is your job. This is how you support your family, et cetera, versus the other places that don't have the budget and just don't have the staff that we do here at the county park district.
Yeah. Like Morrow County is like that. But then you got some of our neighboring counties like Harding and Union County that don't even have a park district. Then, of course, you know, you do have one like Delaware County that have a very well-established park district. They're called the Preservation Parks. When they have over 30 employees and they have about over a dozen parks, which, you know, they have a very nice levy which supports them, and you know, of course, New Delaware County is a lot more populated than Marion County, so I think that's what helps them out, you know, able to establish such a wonderful park district down there.
Before we get to talking about the events of October, upcoming events for November and December, and goodness sakes, it's almost Christmas time. Can you believe it? Less than 2 months away. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about some of the controversies going on to our neighbors to the northwest of southwest of Marion. Goodness sakes, I have to get my geography together. At the Columbus Zoo, seems like there's been a scandal with some of the employees. Not sure if you've been following that. It's kind of tricky, and we have also the unfortunate story of the Alzheimer's being suffered by Mr. Jack Hanna. So some of the news, James, that we've seen about the Columbus Zoo, which we're all proud of here in the entire Buckeye State, hasn't really been in a positive light. Did you have any opinions about that? Anything you might want to share regarding maybe some of the politics behind this great institution?
Well, I'll admit, I mean, I've been following it a little, but I don't fully understand the full logistics. I mean, I guess what really happened. But, I mean, just in any situation, I mean, in any organization, of course, you're going to have people that may, you know, do things that may not be right. But, you know, it's like the old expression. There's always one bad apple in every barrel, but, you know, there's always those other good ones. But then, speaking of the Columbus Zoo, I just saw yesterday on Facebook that they are doing some renovation in the North American exhibit area. That's my favorite area. And I guess the last renovations in that part of the zoo was in 1998, so quite a long time ago. So I think they're going to help with the black bear, the otter, the beaver, the bald eagle, and I forget, there was a few other of the North America exclosures or areas with the animals. So they said it should be done in 2025. So that's quite exciting.
Yeah, we want to focus on the positive. It just distressing this great institution we're all proud of. We hear about the politics, and does it tarnish the image, or should we not worry about it? I don't know, but I agree with you. Let's go ahead and look at the great things about the zoo. And every organization, the bigger they are, the more controversy, the more side A versus side B we're going to experience. And it really is unfortunate when the purpose of the zoo is to educate, get people of all ages interested in our natural wildlife, and just be a pillar of the community. We'd like to see more of that and just less of the negativity. With respect to Jack Hanna, we're all really saddened, as I'm sure you are, James. Have you ever met Jack? Did you have an opinion of him? I've heard he's quite a colorful character. And you would think, I mean, yeah. Somebody who was on so many talk shows and has been around so many members of the animal kingdom that are not Homo sapiens, if there ever were a colorful character, that would certainly be Jack.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was in college, my friends and I, we just went to the Columbus Zoo one day just for fun. And there in the main food court area, kind of out there by the gorilla exhibit area, it was funny. We were in the one pizza line, and we kept looking and looking at this guy. I said, man, that guy looks awful familiar. And by the time we almost got up to there, my friend's like, oh, man, that's Jack Hanna. I said, what? Yeah, he was helping the vendors. He was serving pizza. And, of course, I didn't have my pen or paper. So then after I got my pizza from Jack Hanna, I laughed and told my friend, I said, do you think we should have had him autograph our pizza, you know, put with his finger? And of course, he said, no, don't do that. So, yeah, that's kind of the only experience I've only got to meet Jack Hanna. But, yeah, I heard, yeah, he's very well with knowledge about the animals around the area.
Did you like to watch him on the TV talk shows as a youngster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was funny when some of the animals, especially when they didn't kind of cooperate with him, and they kind of do their own thing, and, you know, he's just kind of talking and talking, you know, like the old saying goes, the show must go on. And but he really kept his cool. I mean, it would be very nerve-wracking, you know, trying to give a presentation on live national television, and you have these animals, they're just doing their own thing. So I think he handled himself very well in those situations.
You know, James, people are unpredictable enough, and other members of the animal kingdom even more so. So we do send good wishes to Jack Hanna and his family. Gave us so many great memories here in the Central and Mid-Ohio area. And again, in the surrounding counties like Marion County, James, where you hang your hat, where you get your when you get your paycheck, there's much to do, not just in the big cities that are part of the great Buckeye State. So speaking of the Park District, James, one might think that just because the weather is getting colder and people are turning their attention to Thanksgiving, Christmas, and 2024 and points beyond, that the Park District might be in hibernation. That could not be further from the truth. In fact, in some ways, this time of the year, or any time where there's a change in seasons, because that means there's a change of what's going on, every day tends to be kind of different, this can be one of the most exciting times. Now, of course, this program, James, is going to be so good, we'll be repeating it millions and trillions of times. So this next item, which is the Trail of Treats, coming up in a few days, may have already taken place when people are listening, but that's okay. It's worth hearing a reprise of the itinerary and expectations of the event. So that's coming up on, I believe it is Saturday, 10/28/23, 3 to 5 p.m., the 7th annual Trail of Treats. And tell us, James, exactly what that is. And is this one of those events that seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger every year?
Yes, so Trail of Treats is our trick-or-treat event that we've done for the last 7 years. And what happens is we will put people out along the trail that companies, organizations, sometimes we have just individual families that, especially that live in more in rural areas, and they don't get any trick-or-treaters. So they figure that, hey, this might be the only way to do trick-or-treat. And so we only put them within the first half mile, because obviously we could put them all 12 miles of the Tallgrass Trail. That wouldn't be very fun. So, yeah, you will have to do a little walking, half mile there and half mile back. Sometimes we do a little shorter. Just depends on how many people that do show up. And so what will happen is the participants will start on the right side, and then whoever is the last vendor handing out candy on the right, they'll turn around and go on the other side and then come back. So that's kind of the logistics. And I don't know if you were paying attention on our social media. We did get very close to canceling it, because as you mentioned, the thing about Trail of Treats, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're almost getting to the point, it's almost, might almost get too big for us, but we're still managing by. So we're always needing people to help with parking, to help direct people with cars, and also to making sure, you know, as people are backing up, no kids, you know, don't get in the way. And it was sad because in August, I was, you know, I start this out in August and, you know, recruiting volunteers, getting vendors, getting donations. And nobody was wanting to help. And then finally, last Thursday, after we had our park board meeting, we made a very good discussion, and we just said, all right, we're going to make an announcement that if we don't have help by Tuesday, they said we have to cancel due to safety reasons. And I tell you what, we had at least 6-7 individuals that stepped up and said, hey, I will help. So it's nice, but it's also, too, it's kind of frustrating because it's like, you feel like I did want to feel like I was threatening to cancel the event, but I was glad people did step up and wanted to help out. So please, please be patient, because as most of you might know who have participated in the past, you know, that trailhead at Tallgrass Trail is not the largest parking lot. So we will be parking people on the grass, and also, too, yes, you may have to park on the road. So yes, you may have to travel, and just please, please be patient with our volunteers. You know, again, without them, that event would not be possible. So again, just be patient. That's all I ask.
We are talking with Mr. James Anderson, the naturalist for Marion County and the official naturalist of this station, and of course, many other media establishments, discussing the upcoming event, although you may be hearing this program in an encore, so maybe it was a past event, but it's okay. It's so good. It's worth talking about multiple times. The Trail of Treats at the Tallgrass Trail, 3 to 5 p.m. Well, it'll be still Eastern Daylight Time. They keep changing the daylight savings time on us, but that'll still be EDT between 3 and 5 p.m. And being the 7th annual, the 8th annual, 9th annual, 10th annual will get bigger and bigger. So it's good to come every year and just watch this event start to blossom, pun intended. Let's make another divergent question, James. This is a lighter type of question than the previous one. You have a son, if I'm not mistaken. Now, you live kind of in a more rural area, just east of Marion. Yeah. But I presume, and I'm not sure when they have trick-or-treat, where you go or where you go to trick-or-treat, but if you and or your son have trick-or-treated or will trick-or-treat, does he dress up as maybe one of the animals that you like to take care of? How creative are you guys at the Anderson household for the Halloween season?
So he has been mainly superheroes. That's been kind of our main theme for the last few years. We've been from Batman to Spider-Man. Then, of course, we've been dinosaurs, and then he's been in Pokemon. So this year he's this character from Descendants, which was kind of like High School Musical, but with the Disney villain. He really enjoys that show. He's one of those characters. So we actually go to several trick-or-treats and Morrow County and kind of part of Knox County too. And last year I was Bob Ross. So that was pretty fun.
That would be quite different. You're both bearded. You're probably about 6 inches taller than Bob Ross was. And
yeah.
Are you also an artist? Is that something that you just admire in Bob Ross? Or in addition to knowing about animals, do you also paint pictures of them?
Oh, I wish. I can't even draw stick figures. I am not very artistic. I mean, I'm an amateur with photography, but my father and my sister definitely got the artsy side of the Anderson gene, and I did not.
Okay, so your son then is more into superhero costuming than dressing up as maybe a bald eagle or garter snake or some other animal that you often talk about while on the trail. Yeah, I guess I was kind of wondering, and, you know, we dealt in some deeper areas earlier, kind of a lighter topic, but it's always fun. You know, Halloween, as we've discussed, has become a bigger and bigger event, and I think with all the everything that's going on in the world right now, it's good to have a lighter type of celebration and one that kids as well as adults can both enjoy. Just kind of picturing you as Bob Ross, well, that would certainly be kind of different. We do, of course, have, I believe, the fruitcake toss coming up at the station, not the cheesecake. And I imagine you'll be participating this year. I think you missed last year, and last year was the year when
I did. Yeah.
I was the most improved. I went from the worst tosser to the best among station personnel. So this year, you know, you're a young, athletic type of gentleman. I may have some competition, may have my work cut out for me. So I'm going to start making sure my arm is strong and ready, and let's see if I can keep my title as, among station personnel, the top tosser. And I don't mind a little competition, though. It's good when you win something to make sure that you beat out some formidable competitors. So now, James, the time and the segment that everybody is waiting for, and that would be the events that have taken place since we last shared these microphones in late September of 2023. So tell us about the events in October. I think one or two may have had to have been canceled due to the weather. And just let us know exactly what the protocol was if there was a need for a cancellation.
Yeah, so it's been a very eventful month with our programming. I mean, with people coming out. The one that we had to cancel was the night hike at the park program, and that was our last one for the year. So yes, when we cancel on our social media accounts. We have two Facebook pages. We have the Marion Tallgrass Trail and the Marion County Park District Facebook page. Also, too, we have our Instagram, Twitter. So we're on several of the social media accounts, but that's just about the easiest way that we can cancel programs. And we try to do it, you know, several hours in advance. And the problem is with the night hike with a cancellation because none of the experiments would have worked. So, and also, too, we have several security lights, automatic security lights around the building. So, unfortunately, that would ruin our night vision. And, again, we wouldn't be able to do the night hike very well. Unfortunately, I had the other Fridays and Saturdays already full with other obligations. And so, and also, too, going into November, it starts getting pretty cool, pretty chilly. So we decided to not do any night hikes until the following May of 2024. So just keep updating on our social media when we're about to start our night hike at the park program. But the other ones, again, have been very well. We've done from snakes to spiders. And then our last one last week was probably our greatest event so far in the month was our Bat and Owl program. We had about 8 participants that came. And I tell you what, it was definitely a magical evening. So we went out. Well, we talked about a little bit bat and owl ecology of what makes bats and owls special and talked about some of the bats of Ohio and owls of Ohio. And then after that, we went along the trail to find them. Now, we didn't see any bats because most of our bat friends have already started migrating down to southern Ohio or southern United States, just depending on which species you're talking about. But the owl species do stay. But we made it just from the trailhead up and around the lake and back. And within all of that, we saw snakes, herons, and the big surprise is we saw a beaver. The beavers were really, really up close. And if you're on the social media, we put a little video, and it was really neat. And of course, we did get our owl friends. We had about 4 owls that called in. So we did right there by the lake, and then we were heading back to the trailhead. We did it again. And we got a couple more owls. So, again, it was just really, really great. And then our upcoming event for the month, or our program for the month, we have our skull program on the 30th. So come learn about how to identify animal skulls. So it's kind of right before Halloween. So I like to keep my programming kind of Halloween themed. So, you know, it kind of makes it extra special, kind of extra spooky. So
the owl and bat program, of course, with Halloween coming, James, the bat kind of has an image of Dracula and vampires and bats are mammals, right? And they're a little different from other mammals as they kind of look like a mouse with wings. So they're a little scary, but most of them in general, they don't really bite. They really aren't aggressive. They're a little creepy, and they're not really good for a pet, so to speak. But they're not quite as scary as people think. And I would imagine with these programs, and the same thing with the snakes, animals you might have thought were creepy or were afraid of, you learn to respect them, understand they share this great land with us, and they really aren't quite as negative as they should be. And nothing else. I mean, they're cute, and you can learn from them. So does that kind of the reaction people get from bats if they go into the program afraid of these creatures that they associate with Dracula and come out almost feeling like they're our friends here in the universe?
You know, I would say so. I would admit probably most of the people that come out to like the snakes and the bats and the spiders program are typically 9 times out of 10 are typically the people who already have an interest in those topics and they just want to learn more. I usually don't get people who are usually terrified of snakes or terrified of spiders and all that come out. Every once in a while I do, but not so often. But still, we all learn. And I love when especially parents bring their kids, and the kids are a little hesitant at first, you know, learning about snakes and spiders and bats and all that. But then I think by the end of the program, they gain a great appreciation of, wow, you know, these creatures aren't that scary. And like I've mentioned a million times on this program, you know, the old general saying about animals, you know, if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone.
So there are many different types of bats. Approximately how many species of bats are there, do you know? And how many different species are native to this area? Because, I mean, I've seen a couple in my backyard. We've all probably seen them. They're a little sneaky. You don't always know exactly what they are because they have wings. You might think they're a bird. And you see this weird-looking mouse with wings and realize that's a bat. So what kind of a distribution do we have in their natural habitat in Ohio?
Yeah, so there's about 1,300 different species of bats across the world. And out of that large number, that's about a dozen or so across the state of Ohio. Now, out of that dozen or so, I would say there's probably about, give or take, about 4 to 5 different species that call Marion home and just call Marion home during the summer season. So because right now, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these guys have already migrated down to a lot of the caves and crevices of southern Ohio because, you know, there's not many caves in central Ohio. There's some, but not a lot. But then, of course, we do have some of our bat species that go down clear to South America. and clear to southern United States. So some do travel quite a ways. And then, unfortunately, some of our most common species of bats are declining rapidly. There was this fungus. It's called the white nose syndrome. And it somehow hitched a ride. I'm not quite sure where exactly it came from. I think Asia or Europe or something. But then it got here to the U.S. about the mid-2000s and then reached Ohio about 2011. And it primarily affects the colony bats. So think of the ones you see in caves and pictures or books or what. And the little brown bat and the big brown bat, which are our most common species of bats in Ohio, this white nose syndrome has declined their population up to 70 to 80%. And within the next 20 years or so, if we can't fix the issue, they could become critically endangered or possibly extinct. Again, these are our most common species. And those are the ones you see in your house in the summertime.
Now, the bats we would see around the house, they're like a lot of these animals, like the garter snake, they're more afraid of you than you are of them. I know you can get rabies from a bat. That often comes up. But is there a danger, not just to people, but to pets? You know, cats are very curious. They like to jump around. Is there a danger to a dog or a cat, a danger to a curious child? What should one do if one sees a bat? They are a little frightening because they just sit there and then they start flying and they don't really look like a bird. So again, you're not quite sure what they are till you realize, oh yeah, that was a bat. That's kind of what I think. I guess I'm too much of a suburban boy to have any other kind of a reaction. What would be the usual protocol? When you've seen bats at your house, what have you done? And is there a danger? Should we bring the pets inside if we find a family of bats in our backyard?
Now, actually, we want to encourage our bat friends because, I mean, our bat friends are going to be doing a lot for us, especially controlling a lot of those pest insect species, such as mosquitoes. One bat within a night can catch up to almost 200 mosquitoes or other insects. Sometimes these bats are eating up to their body weight or even more. And if you've got a nice colony of bats in your area, I mean, think about that. Within an hour, you could have thousands of mosquitoes and other insects, pest species, gone. And that's great because you don't have to apply chemicals. You don't have to, harm the rest of the environment. So actually, if you want them out of your house, I recommend a few things. The first thing I recommend, if they're already in your house, get a thing what's called an excluder. And this also works great for squirrels, too. So it's a device that the animals can get out, but they have a very difficult time to get by them. And also, too, once you find out where they're coming out, you may have to do some caulking or sealing because all they need is a very, very small entrance, and those bats can squeeze right on through. The other thing I highly recommend, too, is installing bat houses on your property. Now, there's a lot of different designs and all, but there are some good bat houses. If you get some decent-sized ones, you can have up to 100 or more bats in those houses. Also, too, if you got very large trees that make the bark kind of flake out, like shagbark hickory or white oak, if they are on your property, that's really great to have. Now, back to the bat houses, you want to make sure some people may want to put it against their house, a building, a tree. It's great and all. I mean, you can do it, but predation definitely increases, especially like in a tree case. If you have the bat house and then a branch above and then a hawk or an owl say, oh, that's an easy perch. And then these hawks and owls are getting a lot easier access. So they recommend you get a 10-foot pole, put it in a very large open area on your property. And the reason why it needs to be at least 10 feet or more, because once the bats get out of their houses, they need at least an 8-foot drop to gain that momentum. When I was with the University of Rio Grande with my bachelor's degree, you probably might know, but Rio Grande, Ohio, is where the first Bob Evans farm, Bob Evans restaurant was created. And when I was with Rio Grande, we got to actually install bat houses on the Bob Evans property. So that was pretty fun.
That certainly would be quite a fascinating project. Now, bats are kind of an anomaly with mammals, that they fly, just like we have Dolphins, I believe they're mammals, and of course they swim. They live in the water. Are bats the only mammals that fly, that have wings? I guess I kind of wondered that myself.
Yes. So, but yeah, bats are the only ones that truly fly. Now, we do have squirrels. They're called flying squirrels, but they don't really truly fly. They just have that extra flabby skin. It's kind of like a parachute. So like here in Ohio, we have what's called a southern flying squirrel. You might be familiar if you're in the pet trade or a pet business, like a sugar glider. It's like a flying squirrel, but it's a marsupial. And so as they jump, they put their arms and legs out and they sprawl them out, and then the wind or air lifts them up and it helps glide them to point A to point B. But they don't do actual flying like a bat. And of course, we know that bats are famous for using their echolocation. Now, not all bat species use echolocation, but a majority of them do. And of course, we know echolocation is very important for them to find food. Of course, if they're using that loud clicking sound to detect you or a wall, that's a very important adaptation or tool for them to fly in the nighttime environment.
So they are one of our most intriguing species, and they're rather common here in mid and central Ohio. In terms of the danger, again, they can produce rabies and spread rabies, which certainly is not something that we would want to catch. What is that danger? And are bats pretty much in the category of you wouldn't want to keep one as a pet, but they're not really harmful, they're not aggressive, and they probably are more afraid of you than you are of them. What's kind of the bottom line on the danger, especially with the danger of rabies? Because that seems to come up a lot if someone or a dog or cat gets bitten by one.
Yeah, so there is always a chance of a bat contracting rabies. I think the fun statistic I read one time that you are more likely to get in a forklift accident than to contract rabies from a bat. Now, unfortunately, if a bat does bite you, rather if it has rabies or not, what you're supposed to do is you'll have to capture it, you know, put it in a box or something. You'll have to take it to your local hospital or health department. And unfortunately, they will have to put the animal down, because the only way to test an animal that has rabies is they test the brainstem. And there's only one way to get the brainstem is to kill the animal. And so that's why I highly recommend if you find one on the ground, A, don't touch it. Now, if it's like raining or something, if you can find a professional, if not, just wear really, really, really thick gloves. Again, put them in a box. Keep them away from, you know, you, your pets, and all that. Because, you know, of course, there's always a chance, you know, if your cat or dog got bit, you know, again, there's always that possibility. And, of course, too, their poop is... it's good. It's actually a really great fertilizer. Actually, at one time, Texas declared it more valuable than gold, or not gold, oil, and because it was just so rich, and actually a lot of farmers would use that in their field. But if you don't process it right, and with their poop, also known as guano, if you stir it up, and I forget what that condition is called, or what, it's got that fancy name. Of course, if you inhale it, you can get very, very sick from that. So, of course, you know, there's always a lot of diseases, not just bats, but any animal.
You never quite know where this show is going to turn, do you, James, or what kind of a surprising question I might ask. But I will say you certainly are a plethora of information and a rather exciting walking encyclopedia. Last but not least, I have put up the Facebook promotion about the bat discussion, reminding people it's World Series time, but not discussing the bats you use to hit a baseball, but the kind of bats that you might see flying around. We've talked about bats. They're valuable eating mosquitoes. I don't know anybody who likes mosquitoes, myself included. But what species eat bats? What are their predators? And what kind of a danger is there that they might come into someone who might feel, well, some member of the animal kingdom, not a human, who might look at said bat and say, yum, it's dinner time?
Well, of course, bats being nocturnal, of course, there's owls. A lot of especially our smaller owl species, like the screech owl, they prey upon bats. And of course, you know, if a bat does get to the ground and gets injured or what and can't fly very well, that things like raccoons, opossums, coyotes, foxes. Also, too, a lot of people don't realize frogs, bullfrogs especially, if it's the bat small enough, the bullfrog will eat the bat. A lot of people don't realize bullfrogs will eat small hummingbirds and bats. Anything they'll fit in their mouth, it's fair game. They'll even eat their own kind. They're cannibals. But, you know, being a small animal, I mean, yep, there's always also a lot of things that will like to eat them. And I know there are a lot of countries, especially third world countries, that do capture bats and then cook them up. And I guess I heard it does taste like chicken. So I've never had bat before.
Never had bat. Now, you've had groundhog. We've talked about that. I was just going to ask. So they are edible, but they're not really considered the delicacy that some other members of the animal kingdom are. But some countries do find them to be an entry on the dinner plate, and I guess that's whatever turns you on, I guess. Adam here with James Anderson, our official naturalist of this station and other places, discussing some events taking place at the Park District, as well as our friends the bats, always a mention of a snake or two, and other members of the animal kingdom and some other stuff that's going around as we transition into the later fall and, goodness sakes, Christmas season. So with a few minutes left here, James, again, November, people think, well, it's kind of a dingy month, kind of cloudy, not a lot of daylight, it's cold. We think about Christmas and, of course, Thanksgiving and, goodness sakes, 2024. But what kind of events are coming up with the Park District as we enter month 11 of year 2023?
Yeah, so we got some fun, exciting programs. Actually, it's quite a busy month. But on November 2nd at 4 o'clock p.m., we have an animal tracking program at the Myers Woods Nature Preserve. So we're going to learn on how to identify some different animal tracks. On the 8th at 5 o'clock p.m., we're going to be doing a sunset hike around the Tallgrass Trail. We're going to start at the Herd Road parking lot. So we'll stroll around and see some of our wildlife friends during the evening, hopefully our beaver friends. On the 11th at 1 to 4 p.m., we are going to be part of the Drug-Free Marion's Fall Festival event. That will be at the Coliseum at the fairgrounds. So come check us out at that event. And then on the 12th, we're going to be part of the Fighting the Impossible event from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is located out there by the kind of where the cat sanctuary is. The address is 1755 Marion Waldo Road, Marion, Ohio. So they're kind of down from the mall, kind of down from your old station used to be. And then on the 15th at 4:30 p.m., we'll be doing a fall hike at the Paradise Nature Preserve. So we're just going to be looking at the beautiful fall foliage and some other cool aspects during the fall season at the Paradise Nature Preserve. On the 20th at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're doing a morning bird watching program at Myers Woods Nature Preserve. And then on the 29th at 5 o'clock, we're doing a terrific turkey program at the Marion Tallgrass Trail. So I know that will be after Thanksgiving, but we're still going to learn about why we celebrate about the wild turkey, some fun ecology about them, and of course, the myth and the legend about how the turkey maybe could have been our national bird. But you'll have to come out and find out about the myth about that.
So I've heard about that, yes. Didn't Benjamin Franklin want the turkey to be the national bird instead of the eagle? That could be quite different. You know, turkeys, James, yep, they get a bad rap. They aren't really thought of as being overly bright. One thing we have discussed, which still kind of intrigues me, is we think of owls as being really smart. They look like they're wearing glasses, and they have that, I guess, stoic look about them, but you mentioned the owl has a very small brain as a percentage of body mass, and they really are one of the least intelligent birds. So if there ever were a bird brain, yeah, bird, it would be an owl, despite the fact that they look intelligent, they have that reputation. But don't judge a book by its cover, I guess. And we've talked about eagles and hawks. They're very smart. They remember years ago sometimes what might have happened. They hold grudges. So sometimes what we think may be the case may actually be a little different than reality. Bottom line is, if people want to learn about these creatures, they should go to your programs or have you speak at their institution, meaning a school, nursing home, et cetera. You do provide that as a free service as part of the Park District program, and we certainly encourage people to use that ability. You'll learn something. You'll certainly use your time in a more different fashion, and like with almost anything in life, laugh a few times, because laughter certainly is the best medicine. So with Christmas coming up, James, again, you have that big Halloween event. Is there a big Christmas event coming up with the Park District? And how is the end of 2023 looking? And how much is the weather possibly going to affect things? Which events, you mentioned about the night hiking, but which events definitely would be a no-go if there's just too much snow or it's just too cold? And which ones are pretty much, regardless of weather, that is what we call rain or shine. Kind of like a football game, you know. They'll play football if it's 10 below and snowing. They'll play it if it's 70 and sunny. Which events are a little more weather-dependent than the others?
So for the month of December, I mean, we do start slowing down because I will admit December is my slowest season because of the holidays. Not a lot of people like coming out. But event-wise, we don't do anything anymore. We used to do, we call holidays at the park. But it was just so hard getting volunteers, you know, during the holiday season, and so we kind of said, okay, well maybe we'll move on from that event. We did that just for a couple years, but starting in January, February, March, we'll have our winter hike series that we'll do on the second Saturday of those 3 months. So we're always excited about that. It's kind of our kickoff of the new year. And, of course, I'm the compiler for the Audubon Society for the Christmas Bird Count program. Our Christmas Bird Count program for Killdeer, we're part of the Killdeer Plains Count, and that also includes Big Island, not just Wyandotte County. But that thing has been going on for in Marion for over 50 years, but in the country it is a little over 128 years anniversary. So it's a really, really great research opportunity. It's called citizen science. That means that you do not have to be a scientist. And we go out and we count the birds. And then we give the data back to the Audubon Society. And then they tell us what's going on with our local bird population. So, of course, you know, yes, some of the programming can be canceled. I mean, due to obviously temperature, also due with trail conditions, because, you know, we don't plow the trail because we don't want to damage the trail. So, you know, if trail conditions are really icy, you know, we may cancel. So again, please keep up to date on the social media, on the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever you do, and you can keep up to date, you know, when programs are on or canceled. But yeah, we try to strive to keep our programs going. But as you know, weather is always a factor. Weather can be your best friend or your worst enemy with these wonderful programs/events.
Yeah, I certainly enjoy the four-season climate. And at the end of October, it looks like we're getting four seasons in 1 week. But that's not uncommon during these transition months. James Anderson, thank you again. Time flew. Certainly flies when you're having fun, as my mama always told me. Discussed a lot of topics. Laughed a few times and got into some areas that always been a curiosity for me, but that's fine. I've come up out of this show with a few more brain cells than when I entered, and that's the whole idea. As we wrap up another exciting broadcast, James, remind people how to get in touch with the Park District and also what they would want to do if they wish to request that you speak at their location about some of the topics we've talked about today and others.
Yeah, so our social media, so again, the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, also too, we do have a park office phone number, which is 740-223-4161. And just, you know, say, hey, I listened to the Naturalist Report on WWGH, and I would like to schedule a program. Now, we do want to mention, any programs within Marion County is free, but if you're outside of Marion County, we do charge. We've been getting some school requests from like Wyandotte and Harding County, so we do charge $50 if, you know, we have to travel quite a ways. But again, things within Marion County are for free. Now, if you're outside of Marion County and come to us, that is free for you too. So we just want to keep that in mind.
I think even $50 is a pretty good deal. Can't even fill your car up with gas nowadays for that price, and I think you can learn a lot more by having you speak. Once again, James, thank you so much for being with us on this late October edition of the Naturalist Report on The Talking Place, WGH Online Talk Radio. Have a great rest of your day, and we shall talk again soon. Adam here, inviting you to email me with questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, or combinations of the above. Adam at WWGH1071.com.